Good. Of course, we know we are getting ready to go into the Christmas season, and I have done this several times in my small group, but it's been a while. So most everything we do at Christmas is a tradition. Where did they come from? How did we get them? The song that you sang, the first song we sang, Joy to the World, that was not written for a Christmas hymn. It just got attached that way. It was written as a praise hymn. So, most everything we do for Christmas gets all mixed up. And I'm not here to change your mind. I'm going to talk about some different things. But first of all, I want to talk about every time you sign a check, every time you write a date, you're acknowledging the birthday of the one that we come to serve. Every time you write that check, every day, every time. Whether it's, you know, so we do that. Everybody does that. The whole Western world reckons their birth of the one who changed the world more than any other before or since, that we do that. Now, much of our Christmas season seems to be more tradition than truth. So, how many of you in here believe Jesus was born on December 25th? Give or take. Anybody? 25th. Okay. Well, I'm going to show you some things tonight that probably will. I'm not going to get in. Pastor Bill told me, he said, don't get into a bunch of dates and numbers and all that. I'm not going to do that. I can, but we don't want to do that. But I am going to throw out a few dates and numbers to you. Jesus was most likely, probably not born on the 25th of December for two things. Where were the shepherds? They were in the field, right? Gabriel field. In Judea, the shepherds are not in the field after October. Hold. And it snows. And another reason is, no smart or intelligent Roman authority would have his subjects travel to their hometown to register. How did God do that? To get Joseph and Mary from way up north to Bethlehem, which was their tribal home, to register, he wouldn't do it in the wintertime. Judea is mostly impassable. It snows there. So, they would not have been traveling in the month of December. And so, when was he born? Well, I could give you a bunch of different opinions, but we're going to look at one. And probably I can back that one up a little bit. We know there are a number of, considerable time elapsed between Jesus' birth and Herod's death since the family fled to Egypt. Remember, Joseph, they were told to take Jesus and leave after he was born. Go to Egypt. He fled to Egypt. And they fled down to Egypt to escape Herod's edict that they didn't return until after Herod's death. Herod died January 14th of 1 B.C. So we know when he died. They weren't there. They had already went to Egypt. There is a Greek writer named Tertullian that writes, he lived about 160 years after Jesus, stated that Augustus began to rule 41 years before the birth of Jesus and died 15 years after that event. Augustus died on August the 19th of 14 A.D. Now, these numbers are not, you don't have to write these down because placing Jesus' birth around 2 B.C., there's some different numbers out there that he was born 4 B.C., so forth and so on. But I'm going to stick to the 2 B.C. date. Tertullian also notes that Jesus was born 29 years after the death of Cleopatra in 30 B.C., which is consistent with a date of 2 B.C. So if Jesus was born on 2 B.C., how do we know that? And I don't want to get into the stars and all that right now. How do we place Jesus not being born on the 25th? Okay. If you turn to Luke chapter 1, and we'll start about verse 5. Let's read a couple of verses there, and I'll come back to that. Luke chapter 1, verse 5. We know when John the Baptist was born. Let me just start verse 5. There was in the days of Herod, the king of Judea, a certain priest named Zacharias. That's John the Baptist's daddy. Of the division of Abijah. He was a priest. He was a priest. And what David had done before, as the priests were set up, he divided all the priests up in 24 courses or 24 groups. And each priest would serve, they rotated around, they would serve from Shabbat to Shabbat. Now, we'll read on a little bit. So Zacchaeus, John the Baptist's daddy, he's of the division or group of Abijah. His wife was the daughter of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. And they were both righteous before God, walking in all commandments and ordinances of the Lord, blameless. But they had no child because Elizabeth was barren, and they both well advanced in years. Okay, let's skip down to verse number 13. But the angel said to him, this is Gabriel. Gabriel, when you see Gabriel mentioned, he's also the same angel that appears to Mary. He is always on a messianic mission announcing the birth of the Messiah or something about the Messiah. So he says that the angel said to him, do not be afraid, Zacharias, for your prayer is heard, and your wife Elizabeth will bear a son, and you shall call him named John. Okay. And then skip over to verse 19. There in verse, chapter 1, and the angel answered and said to them, I am Gabriel, who stands in the presence of God and was sent to speak to you and bring you these glad tidings. Okay, so Zacharias is in the temple serving for 7 days, and he gets visited by an angel. And he announces they're going to have a child. And if you read the whole story, he does. He comes out, he can't talk, and he can't speak until his son's born. So, what does this have to do with Jesus? All right. Elizabeth, John's mother, was a cousin of Mary and the wife of a priest named Zacharias, who was the course of Abijah, and the priests were divided in 24 courses. Now, we know, if you do history, do a computer search on the priestly, these course of priests, when the temple was destroyed in 70 AD by Titus Vespasian, the first course of priests had just took over. Had just taken office. Since the course of Abijah was the eighth course, we can track backwards and determine that Zechariah would have ended his duties on July 13th, 3 BC. And if the birth of John took place 280 days later, it would have been on April 19th or 20th, precisely Passover of that year. Okay. So, now, Elizabeth hid herself for 5 months, and then the angel Gabriel announced to Mary. You go to the book of, read the story of the announcement to Mary. She gets told she is going to be with child. Both Elizabeth's condition and Mary's also would bear a son who would call him Jesus. Mary went with haste to Elizabeth, who was then in the first week of her 6th month, or the 4th week of December, 3 B.C. Remember what happened when Mary walked into the room? Jesus jumped in her womb. She goes there, and so if Jesus was born 280 days later, it would place the date of his birth on September the 29th of 2 B.C. So when you get upset and you see all the Christmas stuff put out in August, they're getting ready to celebrate the 29th of September. So, there's some other different reckonings, and you've got to get into all the stars and so forth and so on. So, there's a lot more scholars that believe that the 2 BC date, so Jesus was probably born on the 29th of September. So why do we do it on the 25th? How did that all get mixed up? Okay. The early Christian church did not celebrate Christmas. They did not. The first recorded mention of December 25th is on the calendar of Philoclaus, I think is how you say that, 354 A.D., which was assumed Jesus' birth to be Friday, December the 25th of 1 A.D. Now, I was doing a study on this several years ago, and some people believe that Constantine's mother, and we'll talk about him in just a minute, probably traveled to the Middle East, and she'd come back and pick that date. But anyway, Emperor Constantine eventually declared Christianity as the state religion of the Roman Empire with the Edict of Toleration in 312 A.D., and the persecuted Christians exchanged their rags and come out of hiding. If, up to that time, if you was a Christian and they found out, you were either fed to the lions or you suffered whatever else under the Roman Empire, it was against the law. So once he made it a state religion, was probably a big mistake, then things started happening. You have these, this emperor declares that Christianity is the fashionable thing. So now what are we going to do? The date of December 25th, which was officially proclaimed by the church fathers in 440 AD, was actually already a celebration in the Roman Empire called Saturnalia. And it had been observed for 1,000 years near the winter solstice, which itself is among the many pagan traditions inherited from earlier Babylonian traditions. Now, they were already celebrating something around Christmas time, around what we call Christmas time, let's say 25th of December. And it was a pagan celebration. Where did that come from? Babylon. Trace it all the way back to Babylon. One of the things they did, most all of our traditions, Valentine's Day, some of those traditions, come back to Easter. That not the resurrection, but the celebration goes back to Babylon. Everything that you, some of the very things that you do, your watch has 60 seconds, Babylon. 60 minutes to an hour, Babylon. 360 days in a year, now that's, our calendar is different, but that changed back to Babylon. A lot of the things that you do that we have today can be traced back to Babylon. And Christmas, the 25th, is one of them. Now, one of the things that went, the first world dictator was Nimrod. Babylon, Babel, y'all heard the story, built this tower. And the story is his wife, Semiramis, they had a son named Tammuz, or Tammuz, however you want to say it. And his queen, this Nimrod and his queen, were identified with the Babylonian sun god and worshipped following the winter solstice on about the 22nd or 23rd of December. As the days became shorter and shorter throughout the winter, they became shortest at the winter solstice and about 22nd, 23rd. Tammuz was thought to have died, that's their son, during the winter solstice and was memorialized by the burning of a log in the fireplace. Now, the word for infant in the Babylonian or the Chaldean language is Yule. You ever heard of a Yule log set on the fire? Back to Babylon. The Chaldean word for Yule is infant is Yule. With his rebirth, they would celebrate it at the shortest day of the year. The day he died, throw a log on the fireplace, a Yule log. The next morning, they would get up, and you know what they would do? Bring a tree in, set it up, and trim it, and decorate it. So your Christmas tree goes back to a tradition in Babylon. Now, in Babylon, so much the occult comes from Babylon. There was a fertility queen, a little bit off of Christmas. Her name was Astarte. And she was a fertility queen. And if you take, Babylon would take that and mix it with rabbits and eggs. And that's how you get that at Easter. So when you have Easter, it comes from the queen Astarte there from Babylon, which we should call Easter Resurrection Sunday, I think. So that's how we get that name. So, Christmas tree. If you would like to, turn to Jeremiah 10. I want to read something here. You don't have to do that, but I would like to read something that is in Jeremiah verse 10, chapter 10. I think I had it marked. Jeremiah chapter 10, starting about verse 2. Jeremiah is talking about idol worship. But listen to what he says. Do not learn the way of the Gentiles. Do not be dismayed at the sign of the heaven. For the Gentiles are dismayed at them, for the customs of the peoples are futile. For one cuts a tree from the forest, the work of the hands of the workmen with an axe. They decorate it with silver and gold. They fasten it with nails and hammers so it will not topple. They are upright like a palm tree, and they cannot speak as if it could, and they must be carried because they cannot go by themselves. He's talking about idol worship, but he's referring back to this tradition that come out of Babylon of bringing a tree into the house and decorating it. So I guess we all put Christmas trees up. So, but it goes back to Babylon. So much of our stuff goes back there. Now, when Babylon was conquered by the Greeks conquered by the Romans, all of this stuff just moved forward. And so the Feast of Saturnalia, that the Romans celebrated, if you have a group of people and you want them plugged in or involved in what you're already doing, say you're having a big feast, you would pick 25th of December to get the Christians to come and get involved with what you're doing. That's how the Romans did that. So, Jesus could not have been born, I don't think, on the 25th because of the weather. Now, Isaiah 7, you don't have to turn there, but I want to read something here before I go any further. Isaiah 7, there's a verse here that you've heard, you get it on a Christmas card. Therefore, chapter 7, verse 14, therefore the Lord Himself will give you a sign. Behold, the virgin shall come, shall conceive, and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. So she is told, what I read that verse for, and I want us to understand, you may have a English Standard translation. If you do, that verse will say a young girl. So I don't know if anybody here has that, but it's specifically a virgin. A young girl can conceive and have a child. So specifically, it had to be a virgin birth. And you want to make sure if you have a Bible that says that, it's a mistranslation. I don't know if you've run across that bill or not. So anyway. So, virgin birth. Why Bethlehem? They were connected to Bethlehem because of Ruth and Boaz. The fields that the shepherds were in were probably the very fields that Ruth and Boaz farmed and took care of. They were there. And let me just throw out a couple more things here before I move further. As we talk about the stars and we talk about these magi and so forth, when the shepherds were in the field, who came to them and announced the birth? Who came? Gabriel, right? Or an angel? Probably Gabriel. That Gabriel told them to go. Was not a star. Not there. If you have manger scenes in your house, we have 40 some of them at home. Some are packed away and some are out all year long. You would not have. He didn't say. Remember, they didn't say, go find the star. The angel didn't tell them. He said they had been born in the stable. So, born in the stable, there, and they went to her, and they were in the fields with their animals. So, let me turn with me to Matthew chapter 2. Let's look at something here. And we're going to talk a little bit about this, about these magi. Chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. Now, we all know Jesus was born in Bethlehem. We could tie that into Ruth and Boaz. As Pastor Bill does the Ruth study, remember that. They were there in those fields. And they were had traveled back to Bethlehem. And they were in a stable or a cave at that point in time when Jesus was born. Let me ask you something. Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever really thought about that stable? It stunk. It would stink. Jesus would have been in a wooden trough that had slobbers all over it, and it would have been nasty. It would have been terrible. You would probably was walking around watching where you would step. We would. Make sure you don't get nothing on your shoes or your sandals. And I think sometimes we get all wrapped up in the excitement of it, but we really don't grasp that man sitting on the throne tonight in heaven that created this planet came as a baby. He had to be fed. He had to be changed. He had to be bathed. He had to do everything that you women do when you have a child to that child. Mary was very young, and I think we let a lot of that slip by us, that he was. And what's so amazing to me is there is a man tonight on the throne room of heaven as we're sitting here listening to this. He's there. And he came and left that to come to this planet. And I think we take it for granted. I think we just take it for granted. Now let's read Matthew 2 there. Now, verse 1. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem. Stop right there. I told Jerry a while ago, I said, we should have brought one of your nativity scenes and set it up here tonight, put the camels over here with the wise men, and found a house to put over here. See, our mentality is, at the stable, you had the shepherds and the wise men. Nope. Not the same time. Not the same time. Read on a little bit here. They come and they say, and I'm going to come back to this, where is he? Now they're going to Herod. They're going to Herod. And they say, where is he who is born king of the Jews? That's a put down. I'll come back to that. For we have seen his star in the east and have come to worship him. First of all, where did the star take them? Not Bethlehem. Where are they at? Jerusalem. Now, there is some different studies done on the star. Let me just kind of stop right there a minute. Of different astrologers and whatever have done some different things, that the star was a closeness of Saturn and Jupiter and something else. But people have went back and done the research and put the dates together don't work. Was it a star? I don't think so. You might think so. Whatever it was, it was supernatural. Supernatural. Because the star didn't take them to Bethlehem. Brought them to Jerusalem. Okay? Now, verse 3, when Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he inquired of them where the Christ was born. Okay. Now, these guys show up in Jerusalem. Who are they? Who are these guys? They show up there, and Herod is troubled, and all of Jerusalem. If we went downtown Hickory tonight, And I'm not picking on anybody who rides motorcycles, but the Hell's Angels showed up and was three of them riding in on a motorcycle, what would you do? You'd look at them and probably wouldn't be frightened. But if 1,000 of them showed up, would you be concerned? Yes, you would. Yes, you would. One time I was going through Statesville on 40, and I could hear this rumbling, I know, a minute before it got to me. And it was probably 150 or 200 bikes come by me at one time, and it just shook the truck. I mean, and then, but anyway, Herod's upset. All of Jerusalem is upset. Well, who are these guys? First of all, it wasn't just three of them. We think there was three because there's three gifts. Now, let me read something here. Eastern tradition said there's 12 of them. Western tradition, there's three of them. In the 3rd century writings, they get the name kings from some other writers. The 6th century chronicle gives them the name magi. That's what they were. They were not magicians like we think of. They were magi. Now, over the years, they've ended up with names. Now, I'm probably going to mess this up. One of them is called Bethesda, which ends up being Belteshazzar. One of them is Malachar, which ends up being Melchior. And the other one is Gaspia, which ends up being Gasper. So they ended up with names. Not here. Not biblical. Colorful. Also, about 673, Magi, they come up with that these were representatives of the three sons of Noah. One was from Africa, one was from Asia, one was from Europe. And they represented Shem, Ham, and Japheth. That doesn't work either. Then one of them, Belteshazzar, he was in 14th century. They said that he was king of Arabia, Malachar, the king of Persia, and Gaspar, the king of India. Doesn't work either. Very colorful traditions, but it doesn't fit anything. So who are they? There have been relics found. They were found and attributed to them. They were discovered in the 4th century, and they were transferred to Constantinople, which had become the center of the world. Constantine moved the capital of the world to Constantinople, and then they ended up in Milan, the 5th century, and to Cologne by Frederick Barbarossa in 1162, where they remain enshrined today. So if you go there, you could see whatever these are that's been attributed to these three guys. Well, if it wasn't three of them, how many was there? Now, the word magi comes from magoi, which means in the Greek, is a transliteration of magic. However, magicians, rather than a citizenship or a cultural link, are presented in Acts as vile men without standing or morals. Simon Magus was presented that way. So it wasn't a good magicians. They wasn't a good thing to be. But who? How did they know? How did they know when to leave? They come from Persia and Babylon, and that whole eastern area, and they weren't Jews. They were Gentiles. So they come from what we would call Iraq and Iran today. Now, when we went through the Daniel study, now here a couple years ago, Daniel was a young boy, was carried off to Babylon, and he survived several different kings, and he ends up by getting put in charge of this group of people. Remember, what did Daniel do to keep him from getting killed at the beginning of the book? Anybody know? Interpret a dream? Daniel interpreted dreams. Remember that? Okay. He did that several times. And as he rose to second in command through the Babylonians and through the Persians, he was put in charge of this group of men. His name was Rabmag, chief of the Magi. And that is in Jeremiah. It ends up being his title. He was Jewish. He was appointed and may have representatives among the hereditary Median priesthood leading to the plot in Daniel 6. When Daniel got thrown into the lion's den, it may have been because he was Jewish and that he was in charge of this priestly sect of Magi. Now, we don't have all the writings of Daniel. We don't know, but somebody, most likely Daniel, had a vision somewhere in his lifetime that at a certain time, a star would appear. When a star appears, you to go. Now, I can't prove that biblically, but Daniel, most scholars believe he knew something. Because if you're in Persia, or Iran, Iraq, let's do it that way. Now, they did study astrology. They were into that stuff big time. But if you look at stars, and I've not been into that, it's pretty cool. But how would you know to look for something specific if you hadn't been told? So it's believed that Daniel passed this down through the generations to a certain time to be able to watch. So these guys were magi, but they also were kingmakers. Now, let me just set something up here just a little bit, and then I'll come back to this verse. I got 20 minutes. These guys leave Iraq and Iran. We don't know how long. And they're going and they're traveling. But it wasn't three of them. It probably was, first of all, they were kingmakers. And what they did, they could go in and put a king in place. Now, what's going on in Judea when Jesus is born? Rome to the west, and Parthian Empire to the east, they don't like each other. I'm just going to break it simple. And they're always fighting. One gains control, the other one fights them back. So during the time of Christ's birth, Judea is a buffer zone between these two major armies. Herod gets appointed king of Jerusalem by connivory and trickery. When he's appointed king, he can't go there because Judea, Jerusalem, is very unstable. Very unstable. Rome is coming from the west, and the Jewish people there, they don't like Rome. So when Herod is there and he's troubled, he is on a slippery rock. Because he knows if there's an insurrection, Rome's going to call him back. He don't want that to happen. He was appointed king of the Jews. So when these guys show up and say, verse, I can't see the number, where is he who is born king of the Jews? That's a put down. See, he's upset. Now, these kingmakers show up. And the Jewish people probably is glad to see the Parthian people coming because it's a possibility that they could put a Jewish leader in place and remove Herod. And I think if I remember the history right, that does happen for a period of time. So Herod's on a slippery rock. And these guys show up, one, three of them. They would have traveled with cavalry escort. It could have been as many as 1,000 that show up there. Cavalry and wagons and supplies and stuff, and make an intrusion into Judea against Rome. And so they go to Herod. The star leads them to Jerusalem, and they go to Herod and they say, "Where is he who is born king of the Jews? Before we saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." So whatever they see, whether it's however you want to look at it as a star, takes them to Herod. Doesn't take them to Bethlehem. Okay, now let's read on a little bit further. "And when Herod heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes, so they said to him, 'In Bethlehem of Judea, for that is written by the prophet.'" Now, Matthew is Jewish. And every time Matthew gets a chance in the Scriptures, he always pulls something in there from the Old Testament. He plugs it. He goes back to the Old Testament and brings it in here. And that's what he's done here. He brings in Micah 5, verse 2. It says, "But ye Bethlehem, the land of Judea, you are not the least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." So when these priests get together, that Herod tells who, they said, well, he's going to be born in Bethlehem. That's where he's going to be. So what do these guys do? What do the kingmakers do? What does the Magi do? Then Herod, when he had secretly called the wise men, determined from them what time the star appeared, and he sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the young child." Child. Young child. "And when he had found him, bring back word to me that I may come and worship him also." He's a liar. He won't worship him. He wants to get rid of him. Because we know Herod sets up an edict where they kill children 2 years of age and younger. So we don't know whether he just killed them from 2 years of age and younger for like assurance. And Jesus may have only been 1 year old, but he could have been 2 years old. We don't know that at this point in time. But anyway, he says, verse 9, "When they had heard that king, they departed, and behold, the star which they had seen in the east went before them, till it came and stood over where the young child was. And when they saw the star, they rejoiced in an exceedingly great joy. And when they had come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary, his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented him with gifts to him, gold, frankincense, and myrrh." Now, we assume it's three guys on camels because there's three gifts. Could have been more gifts. So they show up, leave the gifts, and then being divinely warned in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed the country in another way. So these guys weren't just three. It was a large group, and they were there to worship him, and then they left. So when we look at our Christmas, oh, it's fun. I love it. I love it. You get your tree out and all this stuff. All these things we do, but let's just understand we have boxed them to make them one little thing. So they did all happen in one place in one night. Now, of course, the Magi go into, they end up falling into all kinds of things and they depart and so forth and so on. So that's kind of enough about Herod. Herod probably died shortly thereafter. And then we had the Star of Bethlehem. Now, I want to say, I want to turn to Isaiah 9. I want to say something else real here. Isaiah 9 has a verse. Get my paper here. We get this on our Christmas cards quite often. It says, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given." That's not the same thing. Not the same thing. Child, for unto us a child, his humanity was given. For unto us a child, his humanity is born, a son is given. It's his deity that was given. Not the same thing, child and son there. And here's the kicker. "And the government will be upon his shoulder. And his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." When Gabriel announces to Mary that she's going to have a child, he says the government will be upon his shoulder, right? Has that happened yet? He also says he will sit on the throne of David. Has that happened yet? The throne of David didn't exist when Jesus walked the planet. Future. You have a prophecy about his birth here with these first two sentences, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulders." Future. Revelation. He's coming back to set up on David's throne. Where's he at tonight? On his Father's throne. But he's coming back to set up on his throne here in Jerusalem, I believe, and rule the planet from his throne in Jerusalem. So as we start celebrating Christmas, and we put up our Christmas tree, mistletoe, you can trace that back to Babylon. The wassail bowl, Babylon. All of this stuff goes back to Babylon that we do. Well, how do you thought about it? Any questions? Bill, you want to come? I can't hear you very well, but if you have any questions, I'll try to answer them.
Brother Bobby.